nothing Marvel produces will be ever as good as Akira. And you are listening to another episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. I'm your host, Ben, a.k.a. the Marvelous Iggy. Joining me is my news editor-in-chief. That makes no sense, but whatever, Brian Powers. Brian, welcome back.
Hey, good to be here, folks. And just so you know, I actually will be attending Boston Comic-Con this Saturday for anybody who gives a shit. So
I know where to send that grenade.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Wow. The NSA is going to come busting down your door. Don't you just wait.
I'll be ready for them.
My fiance is going as well.
Well, name dropping. Hey. Is that what we're reduced to now? Name dropping?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'm dropping names, baby. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're dropping names. I thought you was going to say something else.
That ain't the only thing I'm dropping. Hey.
And joining us, the man who wishes he was Shinsuke Nakamura, Jonathan Cotwright. Jonathan, welcome back.
Yes, and I think I'm more like Bone Soldier from the Bullet Club. But anyway, hi, y'all, and glad to be back, and hopefully, you know, things will go well. And I'm glad I'm not reviewing Luke Cage 3, I'll just say that.
Less said is better. And last but not least, the man who I think is secretly our version of Tetsuyo, Taser. Taser, welcome back to the show.
How you doing? I'm scratching myself right now.
Well, there you go. Put that image in your head, ladies. Anyways, we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel. And because we are a bi-weekly show now, we miss a lot of shit. So let's get the elephant out of the room first. We all have seen the Infinity War leak trailer. That is true. However, I have made an executive decision as the showrunner of this particular podcast to hold our thoughts on it once an actual trailer comes out.
It was
I
awesome.
Doubt we would.
It was awesome.
I mean,
it was awesome. It was awesome.
There we go. let's just say Taser, you know, shares our enthusiasm that we're very excited, and we will go in depth into the trailer when it happens. But let's get right into the news. Let's start off with some Captain Marvel news that we missed last time, which is the fact that her movie will, one, not only be taking place during the 1990s, but will also feature one of the first villains featured in the Marvel Universe, those being the Skrulls.
It was awesome!
The Skrulls are awesome, yes. So,
everything is awesome.
Now, obviously, and also combined with the Anthony DeRusso noted that Captain Marvel will not be in Avengers Infinity War, which doesn't mean she won't be in the second one, but at least to say that some time travel shenanigans or some off-world shit's going to happen in her movie, the reading why she won't be part of the first movie. But let's just say, I think I can speak for everybody here, I will let everybody have their piece, that I did not expect to see Skrulls, considering we thought they were part of the Fox deal, that Fox owned the rights, considering they owned the rights to the Fantastic Four stick. But you know what this means? Since this movie takes place in the 90s, we got some Secret Invasion shit going to be happening soon. That's the only reason I can think of that was we're setting up for. And whether or not you dislike the actual event, Secret Invasion, to me personally, I can't find a better build up for an event where it was who do you trust? Hubba hubba hubba. Who do you trust? That paranoia, like, are you a Skrull? Are you a Skrull? And I really fucking hope the final, like, the movie plays into that somehow, that eventually this is the beginning of Phase 4 and we're going to get the Kree-Skrull War. Because we know the Kree are a thing, right? We know they're a thing.
Yeah, the Kree are a thing. That's confirmed by Guardians 1. So
I'm hoping that's what it leads to. I really hope, because that would be cool. Yeah, so I'm hyped, and I think it's a little weird to put Captain Marvel in the 90s because that would make her – well, no, it wouldn't make her the first superhero because Cap's still the first superhero. But I kind of like that they're going back and building the years between Cap and Iron Man, because we know Hank Pym was Ant-Man during the 60s, and we know Winter Soldier was doing his shenanigans, and there's a whole time where we're missing, and I kind of like that Captain Marvel was a hero in the 90s. I kind of like that. I hope
also
we get...
I'm sorry. You finish up your thoughts.
No, I just hope we get faded out jeans. That's all.
Well, if nothing else, this sort of helps to, because we know that, you know, like you said, Ben, there's always the option for her to come in later in part two, even though we have it confirmed she won't be appearing in part one. That at least sort of answers the reasoning behind why they cast Cap Marvel apparently so young, when everyone, that was one of the one things people first jumped on when she was cast, was like, hey, why is she, you know, so much younger compared to actual captains in the Air Force? And so at least we have that a little bit. And also, I don't know if you mentioned it, but it's also been confirmed by Mark Bernardin, who is Kevin Smith's designated black man, that we'll be getting two-eyed Nick Fury in this one, too. We'll be getting Fury before the eye patch, before, I mean, maybe the leather trench coat, depending.
That's what throws me out, because I figured he would have lost the eye a long way before the 90s, at least. You know.
Well, you recall, in Winter Soldier, they showed him back with Robert Redford's character not that long ago, in what appeared to be the 90s. So, you know, we will be getting some of that. But on top of that, the idea that we'll be getting members of the Skrull, because, you know, in the Ultimate Universe, the Chitauri were Skrulls, so you kind of thought that was their answer to that little legal snafu. But I will say it's interesting that the Skrulls are being chosen, because you'll notice, you know, I'm not sure if they mean the actual Super Skrull, or if they mean just Super Skrulls. Like, obviously, you're referring back to Secret Invasion. They had all those different of different characters mashed together into Skrulls. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what they put on with that, especially considering the library to draw upon for Super Skrulls, like noticeable character traits, is so much thinner. But allegedly, I mean, with this whole thing taking place in the 90s, I'm kind of into it, because like you said, it's more world building, and that's one thing Marvel has always, almost to a detriment, gone to an extent to do. I mean, Iron Man 2 is pretty much all world building and all filler. It's not really anything of significance to the character of Tony Stark, but we get additions to the Marvel mythos. So if this pans out, I do like the idea of it sort of expanding that timeline and sort of filling in the gaps, because that provides, I think, for us more context, and it also provides a more interesting story, because then the question becomes, if her whole thing happened in the 90s, where has she been? What has she been doing? Where was she at the dawn of, you know, the age of heroes with the Avengers in Times Square? So that's something I kind of want to see, but I'll pass that off now. But needless to say, I'm optimistic, and I'll be interested to see how the Skrulls pan out. Taser, do you want
to
go next?
I think what would probably happen to the CM is the same thing that happened to the Blue Marvel. You know, we had a costumed hero who went out to do good, and people flipped the fuck out when they realized, it's a woman! Boo! So then they, you know, they hooked her up with a black man and, you know, sent her out to live off in suburbia for 20-some-odd years. I'm disappointed that they're kind of going a little retro with her story, because you would think that if you had Captain Marvel, you know, regardless of whether it's the Kree or the blonde, you know, somebody like that would affect, you know, at least the national consciousness for a long period of time. Even up to when, let's say 2008, with Iron Man's debut and whatever, you know, Captain America had his own, still has his own thing in the Smithsonian or whatever the place is in New York, and I should know this because I live here, Museum of Natural History. Nothing about Captain Marvel, but again, that's because, well, we haven't taken the time to find out. Okay, fine, whatever. But I just think that she would affect more. Because we're talking about somebody who could do what she does, you know? That's like, remember when Sentry, who showed up and people kind of had to go, Oh, yeah, I remember that guy. Yeah, wasn't he around? And then they did a whole lot of filling in on backstory and other bullshit to make it seem... He was always there. We just forgot. I hate when they do that. You know, that's like in DC with Triumph, you know, the time-lost hero who was there with the Justice League, but stuff happened, and then we just kind of forgot about him. I don't want them to do that with her, you know? I'd rather they, you know, start from ground zero. Or let's even have her be Carol, whatever the fuck... And something happens to her, but she's missing for a while. She comes back as Captain Marvel. And then, bam, she's kicking the crap out of stuff because that's what Captain Marvel does. You know, the retro, you know, backstory thing, I'm not that big a fan of it. But I'm happy that we're getting, A, Captain Marvel, B, a female hero. You know, because Marvel fucked over Black Widow. I would still kill to see a Black Widow movie. Kill, but we get her instead. Okay, I can be satisfied.
John, round it up.
As long as I get to see Pybok the Power Scroll, I'll be happy.
The little sister of the Super Scroll sibling.
Well, hey, legalese, if they tried to do Super Scroll proper, they'd probably get sued by Fox.
Yeah, there is that.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'm just glad to find out that the Skrulls weren't tied into the Bloomin' trademark and stuff, so that gives me hope for later on down the line. The more I hear about it, I'm cautiously optimistic. Marvel hasn't done anything majorly wrong yet, so...
Iron Fist!
I'm talking movies.
What was that, Ben?
I'm talking movies, not Netflix.
Thor 1!
You bite your tongue.
Thor 1!
Agents
of Shocker! Enough! Enough, no fighting. John, move on.
Alright, but anyway, I like the casting for the actress, and I've been liking everything I've heard so far. I'm cautiously optimistic. We'll just have to see how it goes. Just like every time we get something new, I'll say my usual cautiously optimistic. Marvel has not bombed yet on the movie front for me, so there you go.
Alright.
I would like to add one thing. Can the introduction and usage of the Skrulls possibly mean the Chitauri are dumped in the dumpster bin where they need to be forevermore? Because let's face it, that was a horrible, horrible, horrible excuse for an alien adversary. They were awful.
They fit the purpose of the screenplay.
Yeah, they were awful. Fuck them. Let them disappear and be done with.
They were part of the Marvel canon. They served as fodder for the Avengers. It's whatever. They're done. We haven't seen them since. All right, so let's move on to the big thing, which is the Deadpool corner, because Deadpool 2 releases next year. By this time next year, Deadpool 2 have already been out.
Mm-hmm.
And we not only were treated to a picture of Zazie Beetz, yes, that's her name, as Domino, but this morning, Ryan Reynolds tweeted out our first two official images of, I was going to say Ryan Gosling, and I know that's not right, Josh Brolin as... The Bionic Commando, that's also not his name, the Time Mercenary.
Well, that is what he is.
Yeah, he is a Bionic Commando. we get our first official look at Cable, and I'm going to cry because I see a huge ridiculous gun. I see a metal arm of the techno-organic virus. I see straps and pouches for no fucking reason, although it looks like they actually have reason. Yeah, he looks like a war machine, and you can see it on his neck where the techno-organic virus is at, and of course the light is shining in the gray hair. Like, he looks fucking great. He looks fucking great. I'm not even sorry. Also, Rob Liefeld retweeted me when I tweeted about this, so that's that. So let's go to Taser because he's actually not happy about this.
I'm sorry. Josh Brolin as Cable looks like Nathaniel Summers' X-Men trying to be Cable. It didn't sell me. It really didn't. The look, it looked like they tried to do the costume right. Now, I don't really have a problem with the costume, but I'm used to... I know Josh Brolin is actually going on, what, about 47, 48, something like that. And he kind of plays older man soldier, but Cable is old man Soldier, you know? And Josh Brolin to me in that image doesn't carry it, you know? And it's not even the whole thing with him playing Thanos or him playing other characters. It's not that at all. I'm just looking at him.
You think he doesn't fit the bill?
Yeah, no. Like I said, he looks like X-Man trying to be Cable, you know? I could buy him as an older X-Man, but as Cable? What's his name? The dude from... Fuck.
Avatar.
Yeah. James Lang.
Yes. Is it James? No, Stephen Lang.
Stephen Lang, excuse me.
Stephen Lang fits that bill so fucking much. You know? I mean, not even... Aside from his look, his mannerisms, the way he comes across, even in just interviews... despite his acting, you know, he's Cable. But, you know, this is another case where, hey, this is the guy that you should pick. No, we're going to pick this guy over here. All right, fine, fuck it. You know, this is some shit I got to work with. You know, it's just like Luke Cage, you know. And this isn't to take anything from Josh Brolin, and I'm sure he'll be able to act it because he's actually a pretty decent actor. You know, so I'm sure I'll probably enjoy it. I'm just not sold on the look. You know, that's the long and short of it.
All right, fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
John, you want to go next? I can close it out.
Well, sure. The only thing I'm disappointed in is he doesn't have needle thin legs and big breasts on his chest.
Oh, Liefeld, you tricky dog.
Sorry, I had to say it. But no, being that Cable was one of my all-time favorite characters from the early 90s, he looks like it. I could have gone with Stephen Lang a little bit more myself, but, you know, Josh Brolin's a good actor. Now, if he throws in a little bit of his, what he did in Men in Black 3, where he played younger Jay, you know, and throws a little bit of that into Cable, I'll be happy with it because I've always envisioned Tommy Lee Jones, you know, back in the day as kind of being a version of Cable, you know.
That's
maybe
not
less
that,
maybe
yeah,
maybe not less raisiny. Yeah. But the pictures so far are good. I mean, they're still preliminary, but I like it. How he's gonna do with Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool is gonna be interesting. So that's all I can say. I like it. You know, all joking aside, I really do like it. So, I like the actor. It helps. Good.
All right, fair enough. To your point, John, that's actually a pretty tight comparison because I don't know why you would, but if you remember Men in Black 3, Josh Brolin actually did a Tommy Lee Jones impression for the entire movie, so that actually fits pretty well. That having been said, I mean... You know, I mean, Josh Brolin's a good actor. Don't get me wrong; he wouldn't have roles if he wasn't a good actor. But I mean, I'm kind of in Tasia's camp about this, but I'm of two minds because on the one hand, his acting ability, I think, as well as what they've done with sort of reimagining the character in a more streamlined, less '90s kind of way, it definitely fits better for the movie I think they're going for. But,
boo! I wanted the big shoulder pads and the muscles.
You are never going to get the big shoulder pads and the muscles, unfortunately. I mean, no one was going to give you that, buddy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. Damn it!
I know. That having been said, I mean, I think as far as this goes with Ryan Reynolds, I'll be intrigued because I don't think there's really been an instance – well, I mean, actually, there was an article posted not too long ago. I think it was by Taser, maybe, where Rob Liefeld, he – explained that the chemistry sort of between these two, Deadpool and Cable, plays off kind of like Rush Hour with, I'm assuming, Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker? Is that the right Chris?
Yeah. No, Chris
okay.
Rock.
No, it wasn't Chris.
No, it's
yeah,
Chris Tucker.
No, it's Chris Rock. All those black guys look alike. Ho-ho! Hi-oh!
Oh, hey, now.
At least you said it.
I didn't say it.
No, the talking Tasers did.
Oh my gosh! But look, I mean, I'm for it. He's a great actor when he wants to be, and I think he can do some good with this role. And I'm willing to give him a shot after seeing these photos because God fucking damn it, What I am not all about is everybody apparently throwing a bitch fit because Zazie Beetz is black and Domino is white-skinned in the comics. I'm about to throw a bitch fit.
She's not white. She's painted, so we don't know what ethnicity.
She's Caucasian.
We don't know what ethnicity she is.
That's
she's,
like saying freaking the teleporter dude from X-Men. Oh, yeah, he's actually an Aborigine.
There is a teleporter who's an Aborigine in X-Men.
Right. No, I'm talking gateway. I'm talking about his whatchamacallit. But anyway, I'm not going to argue that. I'll just say this.
No one cares, though. No one cares about Domino. So why are they upset that she was
fighting? I like
fighting
the pizza, damn it. Anyway.
Oh, my God. Whatever. Also, not sure if they're going to go the whole Domino Cable angle here. I really kind of hope they don't, but I'll be intrigued to see if they try to pull it off.
I don't think that they could avoid that. I mean, let's face it. Name a superhero franchise that has no female romantic interest. Doesn't happen. You know, and Domino, I can't name anybody else aside from Domino for Cable. I mean, really. You know, now you may have
Hope Summers, or Hope rather.
Romantic?
No, he actually married a woman named Hope in like.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know
a redhead named Hope. He actually married.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy. That's like Hal Jordan creepy.
that's the Summers family for you. They're just
Tony creepiest. Stark creepy.
Fair enough, but aside from that, and I doubt they do that because, well, you know what? You never know. They just may pull that shit off. But I like the character of Domino, you know, so I'm actually happy that she's in this. That it's played by Zazie Beetz, I can ignore that shit. You know, I'm not going to argue it. Fuck it. Domino's in the movie. I like Domino. I really would not be surprised if there's something there with them, between them. If it's not there, I'd be surprised, you know. But if it is fine. If it isn't, no, that's fine too. But I'd be surprised if it isn't. I really would. Because, I mean, those characters, you know, were introduced almost exactly at the same time, same book, you know?
Pretty much.
Yeah. And their histories are that tied close together, you know? And intimacy has been there off and on throughout the decades. So, yeah, it's whatever. You know, if we don't see him knocking boots, who cares? You know, if we get to see her naked, all right, but, you know, I'm just saying.
Get that Chalk the Vanilla swirl going on, you know what I'm talking about?
Get some of that cyber ebony thing going on? Yeah.
Yeesh.
Organic sex.
Okay. So Taser can do it, and you don't groan or anything, but I say it, you have to go, yeesh, come on. Yeah. Double standard.
Yes, it's blackness. Because I'm a minority, that's why it works.
Oh, brother. You're a minority, all right.
Hey!
Not talking your nationality either, pal. There's only one Taser.
That hurts. That's true, and it's awesomeness. Just like the Avengers Infinity War trailer.
All right. Rein it in, you two.
Okay.
Okay, now it's time for some we move on from what we assume will be kicking ass to actual video of kicking ass. Because one of the things that actually slipped the net last week when we talked about, or 2 weeks ago rather, at San Diego Comic-Con, is we got the official gameplay trailer for Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. Have we all had a chance to watch it now? Okay.
I haven't.
That's a yes from
Taser. All right, I haven't yet because I don't have the game system that's going to be able to play it, so I just haven't really been, looking at it. I know
kind
I cover
like
Marvel
what,
stuff, but
kind of like, what's the point?
Yeah, he had no shits to give. Basically, he's like, I can't play this shit, so fuck it all.
No.
Yeah, I just updated to a 360 not too long ago, relatively. So come on.
Oh my.
Oh. Welcome to last generation.
Yeah,
I'm in Oklahoma. What do you expect?
The generation gaps, what they talk about when you reference that stuff. But yeah, okay. So then John's gonna be Taser for this segment where he just goes and just kind of shit takes it back.
No shit's given, basically.
All right, fair enough. Taser, you're the one who's giggling over there. What do you think? Just based on what...
Oh, okay. No, I liked what I saw. I'm disappointed that they were leaving out some of the characters, you know, like Wolverine.
Yeah, I know. just not a beat-em-up game without Wolverine involved, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, mm-hmm. But... no, I liked what I saw. I'm not buying it, you know, because I don't have a current generation console. You know, I'm running on PC. Steam! Anyway.
Okay, easy. And master race.
and I don't like playing fighting games at home. You know, I'm an arcade kid, so I'd rather be there to take your quarter.
Dude, arcades haven't been relevant since like 20 years.
I'm 46 years old. What do you want from me? But I mean, it looked like a solid game. It looked like a solid game. It looks like they added some people. They added some different people. Fans have been calling for it for a while, so it's definitely gonna fill a niche. But I'm not going to buy it because I'm not into fighting games anymore.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And that's kind of the thing. Almost all fighting games are niche in that way. You know, they fill a specific gap, and you can be particular about what fighting games you like, but they're almost all kind of fill a particular niche in the market.
Right.
I don't think
so. Just like racing games. Racing games are the same way. You know, there's not a lot of them. So, you know, whatever one pops out, it's like, ooh! Mm-hmm. Oh, must have. And, you know, it's like this you know, Marvel Ultimate. It's manna from the heavens. Thank you. I have no doubt. As long as Capcom doesn't do it this, like what they did with that last Street Fighter, where, you know, a whole bunch of shit is available, but only if you pay for it as extra DLC on the disc. You know, that's just some bullshit right there. You know, as a business practice, it's reprehensible if you ask me. So, you know, I as long as Marvel doesn't do anything like that, I thumbs up, man, shit. You know, go for it. You know, I know Ben will probably be playing it, and, you know, he'll probably be twitching it.
Oh, yeah.
No, I can't stream a game and play fighting things on the internet. My internet can't handle it. I tried it. It's just...
It's
like, I want to. I might do a let's play of the story mode, because there is a comprehensive story mode for it. I might do that. No plans, because I already have a big project around that time, so probably afterwards. But, you know, I'll definitely play it. I'll give my thoughts. I'm buying the game day one, so I'll give my thoughts on it.
All I can say is I was just kind of hoping I'd get to see, you know, happen to be around when Low Tier God comes in and Ben beats his ass. And then watches him as he drops just before he loses.
look, Low Tier God may be a scumbag piece of shit, but he's still an infinitely better player than I am. Like, he, if I ever played him in Street Fighter V, he would beat me on fundamentals alone, because he's been playing a lot longer than me. He has more practice than me. He's a salty bitch who doesn't know how to take a loss.
Hi-oh!
But at the same time, I know, he could easily beat me. Or maybe he could. Maybe he'll just, like, be horrible, and I'll just grab him all day, because Low Tier God is free on grabs. Anyways, let's move on to another bit of news.
Sounds like Arnold.
Let's
move on to
love you, Arnold.
Let's move on to another bit of news, which is the last bit of news of the day, which is that Jonathan Hickman, former writer of Marvel, former writer of Fantastic and Avengers, officially confirmed that Marvel canceled Fantastic Four due to the fallout with Fox Studios. Much to the surprise of nothing. It was in one great night the internet said, "By Jove, I'm right!" And that's all this is. Like, we all knew. Tom Brevoort and any editor at Marvel could say, we're canceling due to low sales. Bullshit. Otherwise, you would have published it through years when the comic had lower sales, arguably, before this. The only reason why we don't have a Fantastic Four State comic is because of the movie, and because they don't want to promote the movie. They don't want to promote something that's not theirs. The only reason they don't cancel X-Men is because, even though according to somebody at Capcom, nobody remembers the X-Men.
That is such bullshit. Holy crap.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we talked about that before, but...
Yeah. Jesus. Well, X-Men, who are they?
This new astonishing... team of some sort.
But anyways, yeah, like, it's not a surprise. But you know what? Here's the biggest bullshit that's going to come out of this, is that Marvel's going to spin this to when they eventually, because they will. There's no way Fantastic Four is going to be canceled forever. They're not going to do that. Whenever they cancel, they're gonna try to pump it up, and they're gonna say, we're gonna honor Jack Kirby. Like, no, you're not. You're disgracing yourself by trying you shouldn't have canceled it in the first place. You know this is a beloved title. The only reason we have Marvel Universe is for Fantastic Four. Even if you're not a fan of the Fantastic Four itself, you can acknowledge that they created so many beloved tropes of the Marvel Universe that to get rid of them is just dumb. So this is just, I'm kind of glad Hickman just came out and said it, because it's just like, you know, he's clearly never working for Marvel ever again. So he said, fuck it, burn all the bridges.
Nice.
He just said, fuck it.
Yeah, he doesn't have the indie scene. He doesn't ever have to go back to them anyway.
No, he doesn't. Yeah, he didn't have to. He did his shit, and he did his time, and he's left. It's like he did prison time. but yeah.
He did Secret Empire. Secret Wars. Sorry.
He
did that, and he also left with some of the best books. I mean, Secret Warriors, God Save Me, is still one of the best fucking Marvel series of all time. To say nothing of his Fantastic Four run, and which was pretty good. I think he did FF too.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, it led into that. I'm not surprised. Taser, any thoughts on this?
What's there to say? All of us knew that. Each and every one of us here, you know, of the Mighty Marvel. On this podcast, and anybody who's listening to my voice right now likely knew that's exactly why Marvel canceled that book.
I just started watching Mad Men. It's like the affairs of Don Draper. You know they're there, but you just don't mention it because it doesn't seem polite, I guess, or something to that effect. You know, and then someone just kind of drags it into the opening. It's like, well, there goes the marriage. So... yeah,
it's disgusting that's why Marvel did it, and you look at the state of Marvel now, and you look at what they're doing with Ben and Johnny, and you know, you just can't help but, you know, just shake your head like, yeah, really, just, and this is what you ended up with, really? That's what you're doing? Oh, fuck you!
Swallow
really?
Your pride and bring them back, you dicks.
Seriously, because I is anybody reading that Inhumans shit with Johnny in it?
No.
Nobody's reading Inhumans. Nobody.
Pretty sure they already canceled Black Bolt. I don't think Royals is going anywhere anytime soon. So.
Inhumans, the failed mutant experiment.
Yeah, that's actually...
They're the spam of Marvel right now, yeah.
Oh, gosh. That's such a shame.
Bullshit.
John, you want to go?
If it's okay, I apologize for...
No, please. I want your perspective. I want yours and Taze's, because you guys have the long view here, so please.
All right. One of the titles that got me into as a comic book reader, not just the occasional pick up something off the rack and look at and all that made me a comic book fan was... Crisis on Infinite Earths for somebody else. John Byrne and Chris Claremont's run on X-Men. Later, it cemented it for me, but Simonson's run on Thor. And the one that is one of my all-time favorite runs on anything that has been done by anybody. It even, to me, surpasses Simonson's run on Thor. John Byrne doing Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
He took what Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and whoever before him did their thing, and he improved on it. He did it as a he took it as a tribute, took it as a challenge, and he won up everybody on that title.
He's testifying in the building.
Yep, I'm preaching it, brother. He brought
Preach
in the cosmic.
Can I get an amen?
He brought in the
family. Hallelujah.
Everything was balanced. You got to see throwbacks to the 60s version of the Fantastic Four. You got to see this is where Sue Storm came into her own, became the Invisible Woman and not the Invisible Girl. Made Franklin Richards actually a decent little character for, you know, being, you know, for what he was. Doctor Doom, the best version of Doctor Doom. is in John Byrne's run. Best version of Galactus, bar none, is probably in Fantastic in John Byrne's run.
That's a statement.
People went to Reed Richards for help. Tony Stark went to Reed Richards for help. The Avengers went to Reed Richards and the Fantastic Four for help. Unlike the bullshit that we saw within the last 10 years where, oh no, Reed has to go to Tony for help. That kind of thing. Even, you know, the Fantastic Four laid the foundation of what the Marvel Universe is now. You know, what we've got. And the fact that they cannot do a damn title because, oh, well, Fox has got the rights, so we're not going to promote it, is a bunch of horse shit. It's ridiculous, and I think they should be ashamed of themselves. They're basically throwing it up in the faces of the creators who did it, the readers. It just pisses me off because, you know, I love Marvel, don't get me wrong, but the Fantastic Four is Marvel. And if you don't have the Fantastic Four in any way, shape, or form running around, it makes it a pale imitation. I mean, for crying out loud, they gave Doom his own friggin' title as the infamous Iron Man. But, oh, we're not going to do Fantastic Four proper. Bleep you. Bleep the editors. Bleep Disney. Bleep Marvel. Bleep Fox. You know? It's ridiculous. It would be like DC going, oh, wait a minute, we don't have the film rights to Superman, so we're going to cancel that and not worry about it. But however, we're going to keep running, you know, Batman over here, you know, even though he's in the same studio. But
and give him superpowers.
That's right. it's ridiculous. I have read a lot of versions of the Fantastic Four, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And which was mainly sometime in the mid-90s on some of that. And I'm not, and it just, you know, they're like any other title. They had their ups and downs. But to not publish them because, oh, we don't want to promote some other studio's, you know, rights for the movie. Well, sorry, you guys screwed that up when you sold the rights to begin with. Get over it. Put them back in the damn world. They don't have to necessarily have their own title, but they don't need to be scrubbed out. And that's what they've done. And which is why I love Secret Wars, because at least we got the very definitive moment between Reed and Doom at the finale of that. And it just, oh, I just,
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. It's good. Get it all out, man. Wind down. But yeah. Holy shit.
John, that was an excellent rant.
I kind of wish I made you go last now because I don't know how the hell I'm gonna follow that.
Easy. We don't.
Moving right along.
All right. Let's. You heard it right there. We're moving right along, John.
I don't want to follow that shit. Fuck.
All right. So that was the news this week. Let us know what you thought in the comments below on all the things related to us. Let's get on to individual reviews, and I am tackling Secret Empire number 7. I will admit, you know, maybe this artist working on here, Damon Lindelof, that's not his name. what's his name? I'm forgetting his name
now. What, the writer?
No, the artist.
Chris Mickelson.
Andre Sorrentino. No.
Yeah, Andres. Maybe he's not that.
Andres.
Maybe he's not that bad of an artist, you know. Maybe he's pretty all right. He's
just
pretty all right.
Just because I'm a
Nazi,
doesn't
won't
mean I don't have skills.
Wow!
So a cookie.
Wow. You know, if current Nazi Americans fucking take that clip as a rallying cry, I'm firing Brian. Anyways, so I'm about to spoil Secret Empire 7. John, you may want to take off your headphones for this if you don't want this spoiled. So this whole issue, last two issues, have been sort of building up that the vision that Miles had in Shit War 2 last summer, that he was going to kill Captain America, and you're wondering, why the fuck would he kill Captain America? Well, it's building up to this moment. In fact, Black Widow and Miles go to Capitol Hill to assassinate the Supreme Leader, and ultimately, in a sort of a kind of predictable way, Black Widow traps Miles into the ship. Miles ultimately breaks free. All of this shenanigans results in Black Widow getting killed.
Dun, dun, dun!
Shot in the neck by Punisher, because she gets in a fight with Punisher. Shot in the neck in front of Cap before Miles can kill Cap. So, yeah, Black Widow's dead.
Wait, hold on. Explain to me something. Punisher is siding with Cap?
Yeah,
because he and the reason he actually gives the reason in this issue that he gives, like, Hydra gives order and, you know, a way to fight criminality. Despite that Hydra's the biggest terrorist organization in the world, that's his justification for why he sided with Hydra. He can end the war that Frank's been fighting for so long.
Allow me to ask you this question, Iggy, because you've read way more Punisher than I have. I think you read Max,
yeah.
And you read a lot of the normal series.
Right.
Do you accept this from Punisher? That viewpoint? Do you buy it?
If I buy it in the sense that, one, he idolizes Captain America.
Right.
So you have that. But also, Cap gives him the opportunity to end crime forever and gives him the tools for it. So in this sense, I can't. If it was just Hydra itself with no Cap as the figurehead, no, hell no.
Okay, all right.
Like, I buy in the sense of the fact that, and, like, he goes into, like, I can, you know, we can start over, and, like, you kind of get the sense of the overall plot that Steve's trying to remake the world with the Cosmic Cube again, but with Hydra being in power for this entire time versus just a short period of time.
Okay. All right.
So yeah, and Frank is using this as a way to end crime and also potentially see his family again. And Black Widow basically calls him out. Frank, you and I both know we can't bring people back. It never works. But he's just too caught up in his moment. So yeah. But basically, Black Widow's dead. And Miles is not. And he's seen the scars of battle. And yeah, I did not expect Black Widow to bite the bucket. Mm. It literally left me go, what the fuck? Out loud. And the art's really good. Like, I've been reading Secret Empire the entire way through. I've had a problem with the art changes, but fuck, I can't say I'm not enjoying this. Although, and then in this issue, they turned up the more sexual torture sequences between Red Skull and Steve Rogers and whatever dream sequence they're in. I don't know how this is all going to wrap up.
Wait. Because the sexual what?
They're both shirtless. They're both very shirtless, and they're both very you can feel the tension between Red Skull and oh, what was really crazy about this issue was because last time I was talking about this issue was the fact that Steve Rogers sort of revealed that that we knew that Hulk was alive, that Banner was alive, and I'm not gonna lie, the sequence where he basically is talking to Banner. He's talking to Banner about joining his side, joining Hydra. And at the end of it, like, Banner's like, no, I won't refuse you. And that's great, that's good, Dr. Banner, you have your morals. But I wasn't talking to you. And then the green eyes flash. And just Hulk just fucking rips into the Avenger, into these the refugees, whatever they're called. I don't know what they're fucking called. The heroes that are hiding away. Just rips into it, and, like, it's like Hulk is a monster again. Like, he's just, because he's fucking pissed, because Steve brings up, look, man, they shot you in the space, they don't trust you, how many more times? Side with Hydra, we have cookies. And I, like, it was a legitimate chilling moment, because, like, you don't, we have, it, like, it go, there's a long short period of time, like, it's been over 10 years since we saw, you know, Hulk come back from Planet Hulk, and just unleash gladiator hell upon the planet.
I still love World
that
War
was
Hulk.
10
that
years.
Was so fucking good.
That was 10 years ago, by the way. That doesn't. That makes me feel somewhat. Like, God damn, where's the time been? But yeah, it was kind of cool to see terrifying Hulk again. But yeah, Black Widow's dead and Hulk's scary again. So yeah. But that's
and
my review.
Hulk is now back to the living.
Yeah, Banner's back.
Wow.
Yeah, Banner's
okay.
Alive.
Hmm.
Yeah, Banner's alive. All right, let's go on. Speaking of Hulk, Taser, I read this issue too, but you read Generations Incredible Hulk / Totally Awesome Hulk. This is the legacy thing we talked about, which I was right. I knew slow ass Alex Ross was going to be drawing any of these. But instead we got a story about two Hulks meeting.
I didn't know that this was part of the legacy thing. I really didn't, because I didn't get that from the cover.
Well, this is the Generations thing that they promoted.
Cool.
This is it.
But this was it's a time story that you're not made aware of until, like, basically, like, the last page. Because from Cho's point of view, Cho is headed somewhere, and he ends up in Arizona, and then all of a sudden, hey, there's the U.S. Army, and they're shooting at Hulk? And you, there's no flash or portal or weird light show. He's just jumping around like Hulk does to travel. And, you know, he just kind of sees Banner Hulk, you know. And they, of course, see another big green guy show up. So they shoot at him, and he tries to calm down Banner Hulk. And, you know, they kind of get into a slobber knocker because Cho gets his attention, leads him off, and they kind of throw dukes. And they didn't want one to beat the other. So what they did was they had them both get tired, and Cho doing most of the exposition. He goes, "Look, I'm just gonna sit here and have a stroke. You do what you gotta do." And Hulk went, and then just kind of calmed down and turned back to Banner. I went, "Okay, that's a dodge. you would know it when you read it. It's a dodge, but you know, fine and dandy. You know, they didn't want to have one be better than the other." So they both get to talking. Banner finds out that, yeah, he's a Hulk, and somehow he's able to control the transformation. How do you do that? You know, what I didn't know is that, and they say it explicitly both in the description for Cho and Cho himself, is Cho used nanobots to take the Hulk out of him and put it in himself?
I didn't know that.
That's news to me. Yeah. Okay.
Really, it is the writer who wrote it,
but I didn't know how.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it is the writer of the main series. So,
yeah, I guess that's it then.
You know, it's not like another writer is like infringing on something. It's him coming up with it.
Okay.
So.
You know, so that's the thing.
It's just weird.
When you read it, well, and you don't know anything about it, that, you know, you could either just go accept it and move on, which is really what I'm doing, or you could stop and try to figure it out, because I don't know if they've ever actually shown it. I can't say whether they did or didn't. As far as I know, they didn't. Either way, they both get to talking. Cho's trying to figure out a way that he could, you know, help Banner, you know, in this regard. And he's like, "Okay, look, what we're going to do is, you know, we need to get some eat because I'm hungry and this, that, and we're going to get, you know, I need some clothes." They robbed somebody's clothing line because this is Arizona. And, you know, Cho's kind of all, you know, conflicted about it. And then he goes, "Let's go over there to go get something to eat." And Ben is like, "No, I can't because my face, I'm way too recognizable. Here, let's check this out." And he starts dumpster diving. And honestly, I know that there were times when Banner literally had to live off the land because, you know, everybody and then some was after that ass. But seeing him dig through garbage and then find, like, almost a fully formed wrap burger and then just digging into it like it was manna from heaven, you know, you just can't help but go, "Wow. That's sad right there, man," you know. And, you know, then there's comparisons, you know, between how they riffed off at the Hulk and, you know, the Hulk being, you know, problematic and this and that and whatever. And what happens? Some sea creature starts attacking. This is still Arizona. So, sea creature. starts attacking a town. The military shows up and they start, you know, throwing rockets. And Cho doesn't want Banner to get upset, so he has them. He has him evacuate a civic center, and Cho goes to attack him, and then the army attacks him because he's green, and then Cho gets pissed that they're attacking him while he's trying to, you know, stop this monster. So he starts going on a rampage, you know, with the foot stomps and everything. And then Banner turns into Hulk and knocks him out, you know, well, starts knocking him around. And I don't know what happens with the monster because they, you know, he kind of hits the monster and then Banner and him end up elsewhere. And then they stop fighting, and Banner just basically says, well, you know, you and I talked about things, and, you know, I know you try to be the hero because you're a decent person, but let's face it, we're not heroes, we're prison wardens, you know, and, you know, the way he lays it out there is, well, yeah, you know, considering what the Hulk is and what Banner tried to do for most of his existence. Yeah, this is him holding back all of that pent-up rage and shit, you know, because of the father and killing the mom and beating him up and all that other shit. So you're supposed to feel sorry for him, and I can't. And the reason why I don't feel sorry is because I was here when Peter David invented all that back shit, and Banner got over that. Granted, this is apparently supposed to be long before that. You know, because that was – Peter David ended up inventing Professor Hulk, and that's because that was a
– Yeah, this was like the 60s. Clearly, yeah. It was
like the 60s, mid-70s. Although, when you look at the populace, that's clearly modern day. it's kind of anachronistic like that. But you get – it's like earlier in Banner's existence. So, you know, that's all well and good. But like I said, you know – Banner says what he says, and when Cho accepts it, because Cho had said that he'd been having problems controlling the transformations, i.e. he's been getting angry and starting to lose it, when he accepts what Banner says, that's when whatever was holding him in that time period starts sending him back. Again, there's no explanation given for this. There's no, you know, alien or mystic or whatever other bullshit that sent him there is now pulling him back. He just fades the fuck out. And, you know, it's just Banner here doing, you know, whatever the fuck. So you're kind of left with Cho coming to grips with, you know, the issues that, you know, I guess you say he might have been trying to ignore or whatever. And it's not bad, but, you know, for me, because I've seen all of this shit from, you know, whatever up to now, and I'm just kind of retread. That's what it felt like to me. It's just retread of the tragedy that is the Hulk, and it didn't really affect me. It didn't really impart anything on me. It was an interesting story to have the two of them meet like this, but, you know. I would say that for people who don't read Hulk much, this isn't a bad book to read because you can at least – you can see the two characters play off each other, which I don't think they did too much, you know? So that's a good thing. And if you're not really a Hulk reader and you don't really know a whole lot, then yeah, you know, it's not a bad book to pick up. But if you're like somebody who has been into Hulk, and God help you, if you've been into Hulk for a long time, this really might not mean too much to you. So you might want to pass on it. That being said, the art was fine. The story, you know, as I said, you know, depending on who you are, you may like the story, you may not. The story was okay. Pardon me. I would give this a 3.8 Warriors out of 5. It's not an awful book, but, you know, it depends on whether you're a veteran reader or not.
All right, let's go to Jonathan, another old man, for Astonishing X-Men number one, who apparently also had a very interesting conclusion. Jonathan, give us your deets on Astonishing X-Men number one.
Dude, you got to do the antenna thing again. You're breaking up.
Yeah, okay, hold on. John, yeah, okay, let's... Scratch that, reverse it. Let's go to Brian, okay. Who's going to review Iron Fist number 6.
Actually, I'm not. I'm going to review. I posted in the message. I switched mine to 3, number 5.
You know what? No, you're reviewing Iron Fist number 6.
No, I want to review Nick Fury number 5.
Do you hear me? Do you hear me now?
Yeah, you sound a lot better now.
Yeah,
okay.
Okay,
can
John,
I do it on?
Yeah.
You're breaking up again.
All right.
Wow, the internet trolls are messing with him today.
Brian, please go ahead with Nick Fury number 5.
You got it. So, this is a Nick Fury number 5. It's a standalone issue, as they have all been
so far
for the most part. This one involves Nick Fury allegedly going on vacation to a sleepy little town called Maple Grove. Little town, slice of Americana, antiquing, that whole sort of thing. And Nick Fury legitimately thinks it's a vacation until he is informed by his handlers that it turns out he's not actually on vacation. Turns out Maple Grove is part of a training program for assassins where the entire town is dedicated to seeing how these operatives adapt to different identities and are able to approach different scenarios in any sort of location, like a diner or a shop or out on the street. So Nick Fury's been sent into the town unknowingly in order to kill the entire town. So, Nick Fury's on the warpath. He's killing everybody left and right, and it's beautifully illustrated violence from the jump. It's Nick Fury in basically what amounts to, I think he's in a Hawaiian shirt, if I'm not mistaken, or just some sort of casual gear. And he's beating people with a mounted swordfish on the wall and a pocket watch and a coffee cup. And he's just kicking ass all over the place. And so after what is actually kind of fucking, I don't know if this is stupid or brilliant, you guys be the judge, there's a full-page spread that goes on for 4 pages. So essentially what happens here is you have to have 2 copies of Nick Fury number 5 and put the first full-page spread next to the second full-page spread, and that gives you the full-page spread. It's pretty fucking insane. But at the same time, it illustrates some of the craziest bullshit. There's a giant clown with a machine gun just letting loose, and Nick Fury's on, like, a fucking ATV mowing people down, and he's fighting a football team, and it turns out all the children in the town are little people, so he's beating up midgets too. So
that's awesomeness. That's like an 80s movie. You know, pretty soon, let me guess, after that he's going to go to like a snow lodge.
They haven't done that yet, but let me tell you something. They've done the classic caper on a train. They've done the underwater mission. They've done space. It's only a matter of time before they get to the snow lodge. They've already done the sleepy little suburban town. And so the story comes back around again because Nick Fury stopped for directions early on to get him from some guy fixing the car. Turns out he's actually the head honcho assassin that runs the place, and he's the one guy who Fury's missed thus far. And so we end it with this dude scoping Fury to take a shot in his car. Turns out inside the car, like many of Nick Fury's toys, has hologram projection, and so we got Nick Fury sneaking up behind this guy. And I'm interested in the exchange because it's brief, but it's sort of, I don't know, it's interesting. Basically, Nick Fury's got a gun to the back of this guy's head, and this guy says, "You're Nick Fury, aren't you?" And he says, "Junior, do you recognize me?" He's like, "I knew your father. Does that count for anything?" And the guy goes, "Yeah, funny, he never mentioned you to me," and proceeds to blow holes in him. And so he zips off in his hover car for parts unknown, and the promo for the next issue is a castle. What that means, who can say? But I will say that this issue, like all of Nick Fury so far, has been the most fun I've had in the comics for a while. Not just like well-written fun either, because it is well-written, but a lot of it, almost all of it depends on visual storytelling, and that is where this guy really comes in, Akko, or Akko, however the fuck you want to pronounce it. He is an amazing visual storyteller, and also, I mean, just what he does is amazing. I mean, the fact that he packs so much color and sort of action into just one book is honestly kind of astonishing, And big shouts out, of course, to Hugo Petrus, who was the inker and also penciler for a few pages to help fill in some spots, and Rochelle Rosenberg, who was the colorist, because this issue, as well as this entire series, burst with color. It's so much fun. And the only way they could improve this series if it was OG Nick Fury leading all these adventures. But I have to admit, I kind of like the idea of young Nick Fury getting his feet wet, leading these sorts of adventures his father would have gone on, and sort of developing his own sense of how to respond to these things and his own adventures and his own little rogues gallery. You know, by the time we come out of this, I'm pretty sure we're going to have Nick Fury with his own sort of archenemy list. And I think that's really, really fun, especially considering we have this there's this one Hydra agent who's a female. She's going to be the new Contessa, I'm pretty sure, although admittedly on the opposite side of things. Although, if you read Secret Warriors, it kind of was always that way. But that being said, I'm having so much fun with this series. It's a blast to read. It's amazing to look at. It's a Technicolor dream, let me tell you something. So, I mean, geez. The only thing I'll say is that this didn't really have any big overarching implications, whereas a few of the stories throughout have had overarching implications, such as this ongoing battle with this female Hydra agent whose name escapes me for the moment. But overall, I mean, it's just an amazing thing to read. If you can get past the fact that it's Nick Fury Jr., then you're sold, you're money. I would not hesitate to recommend this book to anybody. So, yeah, I'll give it a 4 out of 5. Real, real solid. The only thing I'll say is that if you're not a fan of visual storytelling and you're looking for more of the classic spy thriller where two guys talk to each other in a room or something like that, this isn't what that is. This is visual storytelling at its finest. It's all the goofy parts of James Bond smashed together in a Marvel comic. So, there you go.
Still don't believe you. All right, anyways, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to end this episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Unfortunately, John's internet just became too unstable because the raccoons kept biting the cable.
Tom said, Rams Fantastic Four, will you? We can't have that. And
Stan Lee's outside cutting his wires. That's what is going on. But either way, follow us on Twitter at the Warriors 3 PCAS. All three of these gentlemen, John, who's not here, but all do a great job. Running the Facebook because I'm not there, so I'm assuming they're doing a great job, just because it's less of a headache on me. Anyway, y'all fuckers, what anything to say before we leave?
Yeah, like to thank y'all who gave us likes over the last show. Like to thank A-Train for, you know, doing the share, because, you know, he's got a lot of people that actually follow his ass on Facebook. So, you know, thanks for that, bud. And I got nothing else. Nothing clean anyway.
Brian?
Well, like you said, we're all on Facebook at the Mighty Warriors Theme Marvel Podcast. You can like us there. We share news articles. We're a big aggregate, kind of. So if you're looking for Marvel news, we're the top spot. Taser, John, and myself all contribute in some way, shape, or form on a given week, so please stop by. I'm on Twitter at NoMrPowers. That's at NoMrPowers. And I'm going to have a blast at Boston Comic Con. I'll try to come back with some stories. And I know Taser might be a little bit jealous because I'm hoping to see Ming-Na Wen, who's going to be there. Oh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah.
Bye.
No, sir.
Oh,
damn it. Curses.
Oh, shit. Season 3 of Voltron just dropped. Oh, my God. I have to.
What about
right,
season
anyways,
5 of
I have to go
watch S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I have to go watch Voltron, Legendary Defender, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you all in 2 weeks for another exciting episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. I'll form the head.